गणपतिगुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनशृण्वन्नोतिभिः सीदसातनम् ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषा वहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। So I thank all of you for joining this course that we're going to be having. As some of you were in the Sunday Gita class, and that one is on break for a little while I'm away. And then our Thursday class, we just finished studying the Murdaka Upanishad. And then as those were in that class, I was saying, I want to do something until the end of the year, not to start some other extensive text. It'll take half a year or a year at this time. And I was thinking what to do, and then I remembered this text. And actually, the court, when I come here to Pennsylvania every year, I come here to learn with Swami Tattvirandandaji, who is one of the greatest scholar of Vedanta, greatest example that I know of. So I asked him a few years ago about what to teach, and he had suggested this one. And he also I've learned some of it from him in person, the whole text, then through recordings after that. And it's a very good text that somebody can just take parts of it. That's the nice thing about it. So it's a fill gap on the one hand, but a very, you know, kind of like a fill gap, but you need a snack, right? You're going to have a healthy snack. You can go and have an unhealthy snack or a healthy snack. So this fill gap, it's not like we're just putting some just to fill our time, but it's still talking about the essence of Vedanta. So it's not, it's a fill gap so we can continue at that time like this. And the way he also talks about it, like grapes, where if you need a snack, you can just take a few and snack on them. And in the verses themselves, they can come in clusters where you would want to cover that section because they're kind of interconnected, small cluster. Other ones you just one verse also, you can just read and study that one. So this is a very nice thing about this text itself. And the name of it is very interesting. Vedanta Dindimaha, the drumbeat of Vedanta. This is what it's called. And actually, I think it was in the Mundaka that we just studied, either this or a different Upanishad, where this term actually is there. So the author who wrote it actually took a term from the Upanishads itself. The Upanishads are the text where Vedanta originally is from. This is where the teachings originate from. So we'll discuss a little bit about that within the class today. But in any case, what happens is the human being, as human beings, live in a predicament. We want to be content, right? We want to be happy. And we try to get this in different ways, and we get some, right? Nobody can say they're not content at all, not happy at all, right? Not secure at all. We do to some extent, but we really want to find that, but we put in a lot of effort in different ways, but we don't find the full fulfillment we're looking for. And this is the human predicament. And we just keep going, and then we never get there. It's like, that's why samsara, they say. Samsara, ocean of samsara. Like an ocean, no matter what you do, you don't feel you've gotten to the shore. You think maybe you're somewhere, but pretty soon you see, no, I'm not quite there. This is the thing. And the interesting thing about it is, so we still try in similar ways. in similar ways, meaning have some situation that is going to, this situation will help. I will acquire something. I will get something. I will know something. All of these, I will make some change in the external world or within myself, and now it'll be there. So this is what people are constantly trying to do, but not finding it, not finding the solid ground. So obviously, and it has to be looked at differently. This is obviously, this isn't what is going to bring the solution. And what happens is, long then as I'm looking in these ways, that doesn't solve it. And we'll be discussing that a little bit more now. What Vedanta looks at, it says, well, the issue is you have to first look at the question, the base. Because what happens, you take a base for something and build your whole logic on that. And then you try to find through that. But what is the base itself? Like, for instance, when I went to high school, I was in mathematics, I was very good. But I was good at making little mistakes in calculations. So the plus for me was that in math, they'd want to see all your work. So the fact that you got some small calculation wrong, but you did the whole thing correctly, it still gets, so you get 5 points off, so you get a 95. Okay. So I'd never get perfect because of that, because I'd always make small mistakes, but the main thing I get right. But the point about that is, okay, if there are 10 steps and it's step one or step two, you have an incorrect assumption, then everything else on top of it is incorrect. So we start from an assumption. This assumption is, I'm this individual, this body-mind. I'm dealing with this whole world. So since I'm this individual, means this whole, I'm dealing with this whole world, with situation. Now let me find solid ground. And Vedanta says, 1 minute. You're starting with an axiom without, prove that axiom first. And Vedanta actually disproves that axiom. So that's an incorrect assumption. That's just a shadow of yourself. And it's not too hard, actually, to see that, because persona, what I take myself to be, is something that's, you know, that's nebulous. It's constantly changing, what I consider myself. Not just in the matter of course, over time, I look some years back, and then, of course, it'll be different. But during the day, it's constantly changing, too, my estimate about myself. And then Vedanta looks at many different points. Look, you at night, you go to sleep. You have a deep sleep. You wake up. You had a wonderful sleep, meaning you were there when there was nothingness. You weren't were you an individual in deep sleep? Your mind isn't there. Body's not there. So you were there, but without all of this. When you're really present with something, your whole idea of individual isn't there. It only comes to the forefront when I look at when I'm self-conscious. So this whole idea I take myself to be something is the base, and that I take that base Vedanta is questioning. And it says the more you look into that and see you're something beyond this, this is just like the shadow, just, you know, like just a form, not the substance behind it. The more we understand that, understand that some what is behind it is something much more grand, and that's the where we'll find what we're looking for. So literally looking in the wrong way, in the wrong direction. This is what Vedanta is saying. So this is what happens. Now, in Vedanta, we have texts like this one, many very good texts, many very good commentaries, many very good teachers. Again, I'd encourage everybody, where I'm coming here learning, most fine teacher I know I'm taking a class from, so many of his classes on the internet, many other good teachers. So you have all these things. But then, looking into it, though, I have to do it. You can have the best physics professor, best music teacher, whichever, in any subject you want, but you have to put the effort in to look in, to study, to understand. So good text, a good teacher, very helpful, very much necessary. But the adhikari, the mumuksha, meaning the person who wants to know, the person who wants to understand this, that one, that's the first important thing. So one has to have that, what we call jignasa, desire to know this, to know the truth. And one has to follow up in looking into and doing vichara and doing inquiry, because the whole Vedanta thing is self-inquiry like this. And also the reason that it's done in the way that we're doing it, this is a very traditional way, a little bit modern using Zoom, but otherwise it's the same, the idea is the same, where I'm sitting and I'm hearing the teachings from somebody. Best an acharya, somebody who's learned this in a methodical way and knows how to teach in a methodical way. Swami Shivananda, he says, if the professor isn't there, the tenured professor, but the graduate student is there, who's learned for some years, you can learn something from them. So that's how I take it when we have the class, those who come already know. I take it like the teacher assistant, because I can't pretend to be great acharya like this. But the methodology is, if I just try to look into it myself, it's very hard to look at something subtle like this. So the structure of the teachings, how they point it out, and the fact that I listen to it, that I'm listening, it's being pointed out to me. It helps to the, if I listen closely, it goes beyond just the, you know, there's a very hard shell of my identity. When I listen, where's that identity? I'm just present with what's being said. So if I just listen closely, really helps to point to what we're looking at. And there's no individual there. When I just read, study, I do it at my pace. I'm the driver, not the text, etc. But when I hear Shravanam, I listen to it, I listen closely, the individual doesn't get in the way. Of course, the individual can get in the way by saying, oh, this isn't possible, what are you talking about? No. I was born this place, I have this problem. Now show me something, how I can find a little bit of peace. So that resistance comes up in the mind too. So, you know, the ego in different ways might want to shield itself, or just hear, say, very nice, but not let it sink in and not look into it. But in general, listening to, then it's something very different. It resonates very differently. So this is the methodology that's always used for this. So in this text then, what happens is each verse is like, if you want, each verse is like the drumbeat. In this way, to bring it back, bring us back to it, bring us back to the this essence that is being pointed out. And an interesting thing, both teaching these classes and having gone as a student for many years, then the thing is, the regularity of the class is like, it's like the drumbeat in music. Especially Indian classical music, which is more complex than other types of music, there's a certain cycle of the rhythm they call the sam when it comes back to the beginning of the cycle. So when there's the singer and maybe some other instrument percussionist, the percussionists keep going the round back to that same place they meet again. So I saw that having the regular classes like brings back again and again. So, because keeps honing in towards what is being pointed out by Vedanta. So that's also very interesting like this. But here, the story behind this is that in the older times, pre-media and newspaper and any other type of announcement, there wasn't any other way to get the word around, then the messenger from the king would come to the village. Somebody would hit the drum real loud so people would know there's some important announcement coming. So people would come to the village square, and then the proclamation would be said there. And then, of course, somebody would say, oh, I didn't know I'm supposed to pay this much tax this year. Well, they'll get fined because they should have known, they should have listened. It's their problem they didn't come and listen, right? You know, that's our problem. Not knowing the law, it's your responsibility to know it. You're a citizen, you need to know it. You didn't bother, then you can be fined, you can get in trouble because of that. So here, it's proclaiming something very important here, very, very important truths. And because we don't listen to these deeper teachings, then we're in trouble as long as we don't really listen to them closely and then introspect on what is being pointed out, then this problem as the human problem will not be resolved. This is what happens. So this is what what Vedanta is teaching in general with this specific text. And what happens is there are many different texts. The major texts used for Vedantic study are called Prasthana Trayam. There's three main roads, three main highways for it, which are Bhagavad Gita, Upanishads, and Brahma Sutra. Usually studied in this order also, because Bhagavad Gita puts it in a context. It takes the Upanishadic teachings and puts it in a context where it makes it easier, more available. And also it gives a lot of preparation. Karma teaches Karma Yoga, very important preparation like this. So this is the first. Second, the Upanishads, which part of the Vedas, which we will discuss the Vedas in just a minute. This gives the original place of the teachings, and this is the vision of the rishis, the seers who saw these truths, who discovered them. We don't say that that it's something they created or anything, just like we don't say that Einstein created the theory of relativity, discovered. So they discovered these, and this is where they were recorded, these deeper truths, the universal truths in the Upanishads. Then Brahma Sutra is usually studied later after Upanishads, where it helps to clarify any doubts about the teachings, no new teachings, just any other possible doubts that something else, it could be something else, it helps to clarify that. So these are the main teachings are there. They're usually these texts, as we just mentioned, are studied with commentaries, because without the commentary, it would be much harder to understand what is the purport. And then there are Prakarana Granthas. Prakarana Granthas take the teachings of Upanishads and highlight certain parts of them. Like they may take some aspect and clarify it, give a great clarification on it, look very deeply at that one angle. Like one example of this is the Drikdrishya Viveka, which talks about the difference between observer and observed. Starts with saying, you know, okay, you're observing the world. No, but you're observing the eyesight. You're observing the thoughts. So you're the one behind all these, like this. So it just takes that one, this one thing that you're the silent observer and analyzes and explains it in great detail. There are ones that give a general explanation of the whole vision of Vedanta. And if one that is taught usually as introductory text like this to get a general idea about how Vedanta is looking at things is the Tattva Bodha, and this one we will be studying on Sundays next year. And they're different ones. This one, this Vedanta Dindima, each verse, as we said, could stand on its own, and it gives a whole many little different ways to look at this to understand and look at this vision the Vedanta gives. So this is it's a very nice, unique text that is, as said, you can take one verse from anywhere and read and elaborate on like this. So this is this text, and it's said to be written by Adi Guru Shankaracharya. A few of the commentaries and his on these three main texts I mentioned, and his texts like this are the considered as, you know, this is the greatest authority on these teachings. No, we don't find anything greater. Not that there aren't many other great texts, but these are the golden standard, if you want, like this. So these are a few words about that. Today, the first verse is also, usually a first verse gives both, can be a prayer as a mangalacharan, as a for auspicious beginning for the study. And usually if it's a Vedantic text, it also points out something about what the text is teaching as well, like this. So this is what we'll go over today in the class. So we can chant it part by part, like this. So it's saying like this. Vedanta dindimastattvam. If you want, you can chant afterwards also. Vedanta dindimastattvam. Ekam udghoshayanti yata, astam purastat tattejo, Astam purastat tattejo dakshinamurti sangitam. Dakshinamurti sangitam. English translation here is saying, the drumbeat of Vedanta proclaims loudly. The drumbeats of Vedanta proclaim loudly the one reality. That brilliance, denoted by the name Dakshinamurti, may stay before us. So, saying, what is this Vedanta Dimdimaha? What are these drumbeats of Vedanta it's saying here in this first verse, right? Vedanta Dimdimaha. What are they proclaiming? Udghoshayanti, proclaiming loudly, loud and clear. If there's a truth, there's no reason just to say it very quietly and meekly. It's the truth. There's very clear. And actually, one of the things about it is the Vedanta is the most bold thing, most bold idea in the world. Anything else is more limited. Saying that there's oneness, there's only one, and you are that one, what's more bold than this? So how can that be said in just a meek way? Humility is one thing. Not saying not to be humble, but the teachings themselves are, they're mind-blowing, you can say like this. Or first time when I came here to the ashram and heard Swami Tattvirananji, because he used to come to California and teach, but since he's not coming, then I come here and hear him every year. Then he asked me, how are the classes? And I said, oh, they're mind-blowing. He said, no, mind-expanding. So we'll say these are mind-expanding. But in any case, they say it's like the roar of the lion, like this, very loud, because it's something that the one who gets the essence, they become fearless. It's not like it's open, just something small. It's because it shatters all our ideas about ourselves and gives a whole other vision that is just shows that the idea I have about myself is some feeble, small idea. That's like the lamb, like the bleating of the lamb. But the lion is just, it's the king of the jungle. So these have no question about, there's no doubt about like this. When the knowledge is doubtless, so doubtless like this. So that's why it's udghoshayanti, it's very, proclaimed very loudly like this. Now what happens is, it says, what is it proclaiming tattvam? Thatness, the essence. Thatness means the essence of something. Now when we look into the essence, anything we see is not the essence, because what can we see? We can see shapes and colors. We can hear sounds. But that's not the essence of what it is. The example always given is with the gold and the ornament. So you have a necklace or you have a ring. So there's a certain shape there. And I say, oh great, that means gold is round, is like a round like this to put on the ring. No, but I also have a necklace of a different shape. So what shape is gold? What do you mean, what shape is gold? You give me just gold. I don't want the ornament, just gold. So you melt it down and give it to the person. No, I don't want it shaped like that, a blob. I just want pure gold. Can you have pure gold? The gold, it has nothing to do with the shape. But we're caught up in the shape. This is what happens. So the essence is not something that is can be put into a form. The moment it's a form, it's not the essence, right? So the goal, the essence of the ornament is not some sort of shape. It's not some sort of utility. I'll have a utility of having a coin out of it. I'll have a utility of having some sort of statue out of it. It's not a utility, the substance. And so it's not something that you can perceive. The substance isn't something you can perceive because the moment you perceive it, you're perceiving it with some sort of quality, some quality of color form or of sound or of how it feels, what it feels like, what it tastes like, what it smells like. Five things. That's what Vedanta says, the whole world. We say there's a world. What is my world of experience? It's touching, right? The sense of touch, dvagindriya, and it's hearing, and it's tasting and touching and seeing like this. Shabda sparsha rupa rasa gandha, the terms in Sanskrit, but the hearing, touching, seeing, tasting, smelling. Those five things. But those aren't the essence, because the essence is the substance. And so the essence you cannot just get through sensual perception. So it's going to escape those. Now you'll say, okay, so explain to me what it is. Give me the formula. Then what happens is I put a concept of what it is. But a concept is never what, even in worldly things, a concept isn't exactly what the thing is. Right? We go to school and we learn about atoms. And I even remember sixth grade, we had to do these projects. So with my father, he helped me, we made an atom. And we had pink ping pong balls and blue ones and white ones for the proton, neutron, electron, and make it. And so we make it a certain form. Later you learn that's not really what an atom is like. It's just a model. Because to have some sort of concept so as kids we can understand, have some sort of understanding. The electron isn't a solid thing, right? So in any case, so the concept you won't do it also, because concept is an idea in the mind. The mind is limited, right? Are you your mind? Because your mind is changing all the time. When your mind is quiet, you're still there, as we said in the sleep. So what is your substance, the essence? It can't be then mind. World also, it can't be. And the scientists are always going one step further. Okay, we're almost there getting to what is the base, what everything's made out of. Almost there. A few more things. We need a few more tools to refine. But the moment they conceive or perceive or calculate something, it can have tremendous things they can be discovering and can have tremendous application, but it's not going to be the essence, the substance. Because that the essence will never be something you'll be able to pinpoint in that way. So the only way to do it is to know it directly. Because if you know it through the senses, it's just the external appearance, not the substance. If you know the concept in the mind, it's still a concept, it's an idea. The concept can help to point to something, right? There's nothing wrong with, but it's not the essence itself. So you can only know it directly as yourself. Because when I remove everything else, there's just myself. There's just the essence. So that's why when we look closer, then the distinguish what I am, what else is, there isn't a separation. The closer and closer you look. You know, the more quiet your mind is, the more you're present, the more you don't feel there's a separation between you and everything else. You don't feel there is a you and everything else. So that's why tattvam here, the essence, we say that's why it's not something that, it's not a something, right? The moment it has any qualities, that's not going to be it. Any quality, then that is not going to be what the substance is. So this is what's being pointed out here with tattvam, like this. And what happens is, as an individual, then I have a whole worldview, meaning this whole big thing of concepts that I have, a whole batch of concepts. And that's kind of something that is, I'm stuck within that. No matter how, even with broad ideas, still as a concept, it still is, I'm limited within that, right? No matter what great concepts I have, I need a break from myself, from my conceptual idea of myself. I need the sleep. I need the deep sleep in order to have a break from that. Because something's natural, it's just natural. Let it be. There's no need to, you don't need a break from it. But if that was my nature, I'd be fine with it, but no, I need a break from it. At some point, I need a break, I need to sleep, right? I need a break from myself, meaning my persona, my idea of myself. So that can't be. That's just like a small, a cage or an instrument that I use. The whole conceptual ideas that I have built in my mind. So this one, so Vedanta Dindimaha Tattvam, so it's talking about this tattva. And then it says Ekam. What is this tattva? It's Ekam, it's one. Right? The moment you look at the ornaments, there's many, many. But there's one, it's made out of gold. Gold is one substance, not many substances. Right? One substance behind. You have many. This is something we talked in previous courses. You look at yourself, you're one and you're many, right? You're many. I have many faculties, many ideas. So much. As body, of many faculties, many senses, many ideas in the mind, many concepts, many talents, all this, right? Many prejudices, many fears. This is one. But you're always one also. So which one are you? Can be many or one. Already there's a contradiction. I'm one, but I'm many. So which can be the essence? Now, beyond every single faculty you have, I hear, I'm there and there's hearing there. I see, I'm there seeing there. My mind is confused, I'm there confusion there. My mind is peaceful, I'm there peaceful mind is there. Right? Some emotion comes up, I'm there the emotion is there. The one is there always with the many. So which is the essence? The one or the many? If the many were, then how can that one, that same one always be there? Always one, no matter what, one. I've one field of experience and many experiences within it. Right? Five senses. So all those senses within the one field of experience. So in this way, one. And the world we live in, we call it universe. One. It's one thing. It's all interconnected. There's no way to take part of it and separate from other. It's one thing. Also one thing. You can't separate the whole world. Can you separate you and the world also? You can't separate. So when I look at myself, there's one behind the whole thing. When I look at the world, it's one also. And then many, one or many. One and just like I'm one and many, that's one and many. So which is the essence? The essence can only be one in the end. If it's many, that's a problem. The many, okay, but where do they come from? Oh, there was a singularity before creation. Oh, really? What is singularity? We're not sure, but so we say, yes, there's singularity before and there's singularity now too. It's still one. It externally appears as many, but it'll still be one because always there's the one substance behind, one essence behind like this. So this is what Vedanta looks into, why it's one. Why the answer can only be one, it can't be multiple. Why this is it. So it's saying just one. And this is a very nice, this ashramat, so it's Arshavidya, it's Swami Dayananda's ashram, he's no more. His disciples, the great acharyas teaching courses here. So he used to say, okay, so Hinduism, is it many gods or one god? So some people say, oh yeah, yeah, it's many gods. Some will say, no, those are aspects of the one. It's one God. People argue, many or one. Say, okay, let's vote, right? Elections, let's vote. Some will say this and this. But then, after asking, he'll say, no, it's not many, and it's not one God. It's only God, only one essence. Imagine that there's God and world. God is all-powerful, present in and through everything. If God is all-powerful, present through everything, then how's the world separate from the God? That has to be the essence, right? No, there's material and then there's the spirit. Well, that means God is separate from the material. That means there's something separate from the God. God isn't all-pervading. So you run into a lot of problems if God is something separate. So that's why I say the essence is going to be the one. It's not going to be the multiple like this. So this is it. And what happens also is when we look at the whole thing, we see everything within divisions. Three main divisions we say that when we look at things are jiva, jagat, ishvara. Jiva, the individual, you know, you, me, the individual. This I see as one thing. Jagat, I see the whole world, the universe. That's some other thing. Then, okay, there might be this power behind the creation, the gods, Ishvara. So three things. Okay, three. So I start with this division of these three. But in Vedanta, it's saying when we look closer, we're not going to see that division. It's like we'll say, okay, you have the ocean, and then you have the wave. Is the wave something separate from the ocean? It's not separate. So is the individual something separate from the world? Can you separate yourself from the world? Right. One time, there's Akbar and Birbal. Those aren't familiar. These are real historical figures. Akbar was a great monarch, one of the rulers in India some time back. And then Birbal was his minister, a very wise man. So there are many fable stories told about them like this. So one time, King Akbar was asked Birbal. He said, I have a question. You're a Hindu and I'm a Muslim. So you have your God, but you pay obeisance to me whenever you come. So who's greater, your God that you're praying to or me? How can it be? He said, of course you're greater. He was very angry at him. How can he say he's greater than God? So he banishes him. He's very angry at him. So sends him away. After a few months, he feels very sorry he sent him because, you know, he's his companion and his, you know, best advisor. So he calls him back. And he says, okay, I'll call you back, but you have to really explain yourself. I was very angry, so I didn't want to hear. But you tell me, how come you say I'm greater than? How can I be greater than the God? He said, Look, O king, you're angry at me, you banish me from the kingdom. You have the power to do that. Can God banish you from his kingdom? So you're greater, you can banish, he can't. So the wave thinks it's something separate from the water. Right. So I think I'm something separate from everything. But look, when I drop my ideas, I'm fine, I'm at peace. When I start, the mind is separate. The mind knows how to separate everything. The Vedanta says, if I look beyond those separations, something deeper. There's the body, which seems like separate from everything. It's like a wave in the world. There's the mind, but if I go farther beyond that, then there isn't going to be a separation of jiva, jagat, ishwar, of God, world, and the individual. There won't be a separation. But I'm very much identified with my idea of myself, my idea of the world, so it's hard to see beyond these. This is what happens. So this is what Vedanta is pointing out like this. So it points out, one tattva ekam udghoshayanti yat astam purastatate jaha dakshinamurti samvitam. So Vedanta, the drumbeat of Vedanta. So Vedanta, anta Veda, Veda is the Ved, the usually we take as the four Vedas, the texts, we'll get into that now. And anta, the end here means the culmination, the essence. What is the essence of the teachings? So Veda, the secondary meaning is the text, these texts. But when you say, I'm studying physics, you have a physics book, the essence is the physics, not the book, what it's teaching. So Veda, the essence of what is the vision of the of these great masters, great rishis. That's the essence is in there. It comes from vit, to know, the root to know. So it's knowledge like this. Now what happens then is, the Veda then, it has different sections. And the different sections are, you can say, from gross to subtle also. So you have the first part is karma, karma worship. Worship, but then that's an we take it later as activity. Gita takes it out of the worship zone into daily life, karma yoga. So karma is the physical activity like this, the worship. Now what happens is, so this karma, of course, it can be done because I want to get something. Or I want to get to something, I want to get to the heaven, so I'll do this thing. That's one way. The other way is I do it for the purification of mind, upliftment of mind, like this. So for the spiritual aspirant, the latter is the more important. But this is one thing. Karma is one section. And then we can take it when we get to Gita, Karma Yoga. Okay, there's action, so I can do the actions in it one way or the other. More selfless or more selfish. So this is one part that it talks about in the Veda, as this. Karma. And of course, if I do action in a certain way, I will feel more peace within. If I do rituals in a nice way, I will also feel more uplifted. It'll bring more peace in the mind. So it has its value there. Of course, if it's kamya karma, I'm doing it because I want to get to something, then it doesn't work as well. If somebody has shraddha, has faith, it'll at least help, because what happens is, I did it, now I believe that God will take care of some, okay. But majority don't have that faith. They do the ritual because they hope that God will help. Good. But then they still sit and worry. Meaning, where was that faith? But in any case, at least it's bringing, there's something greater than just this limited world. That's a plus in it. That's where karma, even kamya karma, meaning I'm doing the ritual because I want to get something, I'm looking something beyond just the worldly power for it. So at least I'm saying, okay, there might be something. Let me see there's something beyond this. Second part is upasana. Upasana is the mental worship or meditation. So this is already taking to something subtler. It's going to the level of the mind, not the physical. So already you have to bring your attention to something more subtle. And the upasanas in general, the way they are, which they help to prepare the mind for something deeper, is helps to expand my attention, helps to expand my vision. Like just here in this, in what we're studying here already, this prana upasana was brought up. Prana upasana, it says, okay, there's the energy from the sun, which brings the life force. The plants are living by that. The animals living from that. You're living from that. So the same life force is in the animals, in the people, in the tree, and in you. The more you look at it, then where's the separation? This one energy, life is behind all of us. So it helps to expand my vision of not seeing as just limited. So this, the upasana helps with this, to take me a little bit further ahead. Not just to look beyond the limitation body and mind in this way. So that's the upasana. Then lastly, there's the section of jnanam. Jnanam is talking about this, the understanding. Understanding of this tattva, the essence. Understanding that there is just oneness in this way. So this is what Vedanta is teaching. So we say, okay, so we have the Vedas. The Vedas talk about activity, which is the physical aspect, ritual, which is the physical ritual. Then there's the mental attitude, and actually the upasana, there's actually two types of upasana, not two main fields, you can say. One is, okay, when I do my meditation or worship as a discipline, every day I'll get up, I'll visualize the God, I'll visualize in a different way. I'll think of it that way. That's one way. The other one is my vision throughout the day. This prana upasana, I can sit and meditate on it regularly. And I can say I did it exactly the way the guru taught, exactly the way that the shastra, the Veda taught. I'm doing it perfectly. But then in day-to-day life, I am... don't act according to that. You know, I don't act according to that. You know, I'll just pluck any, I just feel like it, I pluck leaf from a tree, right? I see some animal I don't like, I chase it away, right? That's why, you know, also, you know, if I really see, oh, the life's in everything, how am I going to take this poor animal that wants to run away, and I'm going to say, no, I'm going to take and make him my dinner. I'll say, how can I make you my dinner? Sorry, your life is same life as the life in me. So what happens then, the vision means that it's how it is that I'm seeing in my life. So it expands my vision. That's the second type, upasana. So both are valuable because one helps me to build the vision, expand within myself. Other one makes it, you know, how I see the world. It helps me to change how I see the world. But in any case, so there's the karma, action, worship, upasana, vision, meditation, and jnanam, understanding. So we'll say, which is the purport? What is the bottom line? And we say jnanam is going to be the bottom line. Because upasana is still not an understanding. I'm trying to see things in this way. I try to see there's one life in everything. But understanding it's one is different. So that's why Vedanta, the essence we say is the jnanam, the understanding. Once I understand something, that's just how it is. There's no question. When I have some idea about something, it won't do the same thing. Right? It's not going to have the same effect. Right? They have those 737 max, isn't that what they call? You're going to get a flight. You say, oh, it's 737 max. And you do your research. Are we sure they really fixed those problems? I'm pretty sure. If you're not sure, you're going to pay a little bit more money. You won't fly in one of those flights. I actually did exactly that when I came here. I could have flown for cheaper. I said, no, it's one of those flights. Even though they say it's pretty good, I'll pay a little bit more. I'm going to be safe. The understanding, if I understand it's totally safe, okay. Though still, if you fly in any of these flights, it's safe. We're driving all the time. It's safer than driving, they say anyway. So less chances of a problem in a flight than if driving all the time. But in any case, so the understanding is the important thing. And Vedanta is talking about the understanding of this. So in this way. Then the last part, it's saying, astam purastat tatte jaha dakshina murti saungitam. Again, I read this before the class, because, like I said, tatte jaha. Some of the time you'll see that I read a little bit different than it's read just there. It's a Sanskrit grammar thing, so don't worry about it. So maybe sometime I make a mistake, and maybe sometime because just when it's within the sentence, tatte jo, but when you break the word, it becomes tatte jaha. Some other time, Sanskrit, some things we can learn, but it's not for what we have now. So in any case, so may that brilliance, that presence, the consciousness, which is me, which is the universal consciousness, ever be present in front of me. Meaning, may it ever be part of my vision. May it ever be my understanding. Not that I'm going to visualize the deity or the God and be right there all the time. That can be done for upasana's sake, for meditation's sake. But may it always be in the front of my mind, the back of my mind. May that clarity be there like this. So may that brilliance be there. Because again, the scientific way, the scientists, they will say there's the world. Then life somehow came into being. How? We're not sure yet. And then somehow the consciousness appears within your brain. Like this. Where Vedanta says, well, the other way. Things go from subtle to gross. There's the consciousness first. Then the material comes from that. It's not a phenomenon. It's the other way around. Because look, when you're just present oneness, there's going to be the consciousness. You're conscious, you're aware. The God is the conscious being like this. The world is so orderly. Where does that come from without some intelligence behind it? It's kind of like, you know, you'll just go for a walk. Now you'll go for a walk in some mountain. Now Mount Everest, they find Coca-Cola bottles. So you go in some faraway place like this, and you'll find something like this, right? You've seen this type of thing before, right? Your cell phone. And you'll say, nobody came here, so by nature. It's just thrown together by nature, by random, by nature's laws. People say you're crazy. if this couldn't be thrown together without some intelligence, how can this whole universe be thrown together without some intelligence behind? Doesn't make sense. No, it, you know, doesn't. There's some, so meaning, intelligence means there's consciousness behind. So tatte jaha, that consciousness be, which is in and through behind everything, which is me, and that which is through everything, like this one. So may that one, may my attention be on that. So again, we're just jumping right in here, and there may, we'll look at it many different angles in this way. But the thing is, primarily I'm a conscious being. Any material thing, I only know there because I'm a conscious being. No material thing can ever be experienced without a conscious being there. So there's never a time or place where there's a material object that can be proven that's there without the conscious being anyway. But conscious being, you've no question about. I am, I know. No question about it, it's always there. That's always there. Material things are flimsy, coming and going. There's no substantial, we know it's mostly space, it's just changing. So what is more solid is the fact that you're conscious like this. And so we say that's why the what's the substance beyond will be the consciousness like this. And it says Dakshinamurti Sangitam, which can be named, can be given the designation Dakshinamurti, can be any deity, the older vision, all the deities, it's manifestation, the same one. The Vedic vision, it's one. These are just, you know, just different aspects, or not even aspects, different ways that one manifests, if you want. But here, Dakshinamurti was specifically said here. What happens, Dakshinamurti, this deity is the one of jnanam, symbolizing jnanam, knowledge. Very few temples have Dakshinamurti. People want to come to, at home they worship Lakshmi, because Lakshmi will bring wealth. They want Durga for some protection, Hanumanji for strength in this, all these things they want. Dakshinamurti is for jnanam, for knowledge. Why do we want knowledge? Why understanding? People don't, so like this. So this is why this one is chosen. Those who came are Dakshinamurti Stotram course. When we did that, we went through so much detail about that. Some people here, I think, were there then. So in any case, so Dakshinamurti, the name itself, the one who's the deity facing south, facing death. Lord Yama is in the south. So if the understanding, you understand beyond life and death. We just did Kathopanishad last year. Teacher was Lord Yama, Lord of Death. So understanding what is really beyond life and death, that is beyond the individual. Also, when the deity is facing south, you face north when you face towards it. And the north is supposed to be moksha, liberation. So then you're facing towards liberation, jnanam. Like that. That's some of the symbolism with Dakshinamurti. Also, another derivation of it, it would mean that when the formless, which is all capable, Dakshinamurti, or Dakshinamurti, so formless, but has all the capacity, all the capabilities, so that one which is behind the creation, preservation, destruction of the world, the substance behind everything. The consciousness behind everything will be that. So that's also why named like this, Dakshinamurti. And the symbolism also, Dakshinamurti sits and has the Chinmudra, Jnanamudra like this. They call it Jnanamudra. And what happens is, all these are symbolic. Because again, it's not that there is a form, a deity sitting there. It's all symbolism to point out what is it that I'm keeping in front of my vision. And so Dakshinamurti was the original guru taught in this way, which said, look, there's three gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas, right? The solid, or lethargy like this, the movement, energy, and there's the knowledge, the knowing, knowledge, the intellect like this. three different parts. And, or you can also say, the three bodies I have, right? So these three. And the ego individual usually is identified with them. I identify with the three gunas. I identify with the three bodies. So I'm identified there. But then I need to identify with the consciousness. And if I identify with the consciousness, then here it's always problem limitation, comparison, differentiation. Here it becomes a circle. Circle, no beginning, no end. So then one, no, so have to, through viveka, through discrimination, understanding, separate from these three and see that I'm this one. And Dakshinamurti is silent teacher. Mauna vyakya prakartita para brahmatattvam yuvanam, it says like this in the prayer for Dakshinamurti Stotram, teaches in silence. Again, the teaching isn't in silence. If the teaching is in silence, the student can interpret however they want, right? Very easy to interpret like this. Meaning that the essence we're talking about is beyond what the mind can comprehend, beyond what speech can say. In the Upanishad, it says how the speech and mind cannot grasp it. That's why we said perception, conception cannot do justice. Just pointers. The words are pointers. So the Vedantic teaching to point, so I can, to point beyond the limited ideas, perceptions, conceptions I have to what's behind it, to the consciousness behind it, and that one these cannot reach. So the Dakshinamurti teaching in silence is this, points to that which is the silence beyond, that meaning beyond the body-mind, beyond the speech-mind, beyond the changing phenomena. Those are changing phenomena. Because within us is that which isn't changing, the one. And I always know I'm the same one. Yesterday I was same one, day before same one. As far back as I remember childhood, somebody will say I remember 10 lifetimes back, somebody will say I can see 10 lifetimes forward, but I'm the same one. So whatever situation, same one. So that same one looks at this. Because that same one, I'm that conscious being behind this. And that conscious being is untouched by all these changes, or it wouldn't be one, it would also change. If it was affected by thoughts, emotions, what's happening in the body, it would be changing. Something changing is something changes, meaning it's not one, it's a conglomerate of things, or it couldn't change. So it says that's that one. So that one I am, and that one is what's behind everything. So this is this first verse here, which is also gives a nice small introduction to this. So this is very nice one. And this one, each class also is part of the class of beginning. We'll chant it because it gives a nice introduction to what this Vedanta Dindyama is going to do. Each verse is going to be like another proclamation to say, hey, wake up. Don't be caught up in all this small stuff that we make big stuff out of. All this stuff in the mind, all this emotional stuff, look a little bit beyond that. You're caught up in all these external, but that is not your essence. That one will just flow by, it'll come and go, but your essence is constantly there, unchanging, untouched by this. And that's where you really find the stability, what you're really looking for. So this is what it's going to be saying. So from next week, we'll move on to other sections in it. Om. Om. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. So usually we go a little longer, but here, since I'm in the East Coast and now it's already 10 p.m. here, we'll stop at 1 hour here. in a few weeks, from beginning November, we can take a little more time. And then also we'll have more time for discussion questions then. Also, what I'm going to do, the recordings of the classes, usually I put on our website. Just because logistics here might be a little hard, I might not manage to, I'll put it in a Google folder. I'll let everybody know, because some people can't make it, like those didn't make it today, so then that way the recordings will be there for anybody that wants it. Okay, so what we'll do then, for the, if there's some time, some of the time for some questions discussion, we'll do it. If there's something you feel very pertinent, we didn't have time, you have questioned this, just email me and then we'll make sure to try to bring it up in the next class, okay? So very good. So again, thank you so much for being here, and I look forward to looking more at this text and its vision next week with all of you. Okay.
Thank you, Gajanan.
Om Om.
Thank you, Gajanan.